Foreign people, I intend to adjourn this meeting at about 11:25. And when we meet next, we'll be up to Senator Berglund then. We're going to adjourn at 11:25. We have about five more minutes to do some more riders, and then we're going to get a presentation from Representative Bunn on the House health care reform issues, and then we will hear from Scott Leitz about the governor's 125s and his exchange proposal. So does everybody have their corrected? We were on R30.
I thought we were on R30.
Mr. Chairman, we're on page R31.
Mr. Gill, just repeat what was done on R30.
R30. On the top of R30, you adopted the House language on that rider, and we're holding on the money. And then on the top of R31, you've adopted the Senate language on Minnesota Care federal receipts and deleted the House Minnesota Care funding rider and taken the codified language on R79. And then we're at health match delay, and there are different dollar amounts, and Senate talks about this being related to a six-month delay in implementation, and the House says related to implementation.
Would you just hold that one?
Yes, we'll hold that, obviously.
On the top of R32, this is talking about an additional payment of $50 per month per client for either provider-directed care coordination or physician-directed care coordination. And the Senate had a shall on line 244.16 that we recommend, but I think what to call this is still up in the air, so.
Hold that one.
Hold.
Then the House has House-only language on additional waiver services for developmentally disabled persons. It's House-only. The House and Senate both have riders on county caddy allocation adjustment, but I think we're waiting for clarification from DHS on this one.
Well, we'll hold that one as well.
And on the bottom of R33, there is a House-only rider appropriation for care coordination for the youth special kids program.
Hold on that one.
Top of R34. Based health care. This is an appropriation for a demonstration project, and I believe the Senate has this in the health department area. I think we determined that it should be in the health department, and the difference is that the House appropriates all the money this coming biennium, $1,050,000. And then lets it carry over until June 30th of 2012. The Senate appropriates $210,000 a year, which would be $420,000 this coming biennium. So that'd be the policy difference.
Let me hold on that.
House has House-only riders on health care payment reform pilot and patient incentive programs, and the Senate has Senate-only language or riders on prenatal alcohol or drug use and Oral Health Care Innovation Grant.
We'll hold on all those.
Bottom of R35, State Health Policies Grant. This is $300,000 for a grant to a research center to evaluate changes in state health policies. Fairly close on the language, and we would recommend the House on the language.
Move the House language be adopted.
The House language on page R35 has been moved. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we've adopted that language.
Top of R36, there's a House-only rider and appropriation for a neighborhood health care network. Bottom of R36.
Yeah, why don't we hold on that one? And since it's now 11, we're going to stop on the riders, and we're going to hear a presentation from Representative Bunn about the House's health reform plan. Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, members, and all of you in the audience. Many of you would have heard various presentations of this portion of the omnibus bill, the health reform package from the House over the last many weeks, so it may be mostly new to the senators this morning. I'm just going to give kind of a bullet overview, but I'll try to reference the sections. I'm not going to follow it in the order of the sections, but we'll reference which sections those items are in. First of all, what's contained in this package comes from a variety of sources. People have been working on these issues for a very long time, including the Senate, Senator Berglund, the House, DFL House members, and people who have served on the committees, from the governor, from the Healthy Minnesota Project of the Minnesota Medical Association, and others who have been involved for a number of years, trying to take some of the most innovative proposals from all these sources to put into the House health care reform package this session. So generally, first of all, on kind of the big picture items, it talks about cost containment and requests that we have in current statute, in current law, requiring the Department of Health to establish cost containment goals. They actually haven't been established for a number of years, though, so basically we're saying these goals do need to be established, and more importantly, that they need to report back to the legislature annually on what those goals are, how well we've achieved those goals, and most importantly, if we haven't achieved those goals as a state, what are their recommendations for moving us in that direction to achieve the goals that we've set forth in terms of cost containment. Also, of course, and this is both in the House and Senate, the issue of having a goal for universal coverage for Minnesotans. In the Senate version, it's 2010, and the House version now has been changed to 2011, I believe, in the bill. In terms of some of the key features, first among these is the legislation wants to enhance consumers and healthcare purchasers' power in the marketplace, and it does this by a number of things. First of all, it has provisions for payment transparency. All of us that have contact with the healthcare system and have been frustrated at times trying to get actually cost and payment information from providers or from our insurance companies, and when we request it, we'll be happy to see that in this legislation there's language that will move us to a much more transparent system, both from the provider and the insurers, that we get the information we need about the cost of services that we might want to use or have used. That is in Section 16 of the bill, of the omnibus side-by-side. On the House side, it also has hospital performance reporting requirements for them to report on their websites the performance measures related to the most commonly used access procedures. That's in Section 17 of the bill. In terms of decreasing costs through the system, a second important area is attention to trying to reduce administrative costs and in some instances also improve the outcomes and quality of care through this. First among these is moving us towards system-wide interoperable health records in the system. In this legislation, we have a goal in terms of when to achieve this by 2012 and also mechanisms for helping providers throughout the system to pay for the large startup costs involved in setting up electronic medical records, particularly for the smaller and outstate folks that may need assistance with getting these systems established. These systems, of course, having them will hopefully reduce costs in the system, but hopefully also because this information will be more easily accessed by your providers, hopefully will also mean improved quality in the system in terms of not having duplication of tests, but also to make sure they know what the past history has been when they have tests and treatments. second key component of this, and a great step forward that's been worked on for many years, is that we are moving forward with this legislation with uniform billing and coding with providers and insurers throughout the system. All of us hopefully will observe lowered administrative costs throughout the system because of that. A third major area in this proposal and kind of the key component of these proposals is there's been a shift in the conversation that has allowed us to make some significant gains in terms of what we're recommending this session. And as we've shifted part of the discussion, at least, away from who pays for health care, whether it should be businesses, individuals, government, or what combinations of those things, to how we should pay for care, medical care, what we pay for in medical care. And there seems to be a growing consensus about the way what we've been paying for has been the wrong kinds of things. Acute care, emergency care, those kinds of things, and that what we need to be paying for in our system more effectively and to reform the system to do so is for prevention efforts, for coordinated management, particularly of difficult-to-manage cases and also chronic conditions, and also to pay in a way that it provides incentives to both providers and to consumers to better manage their care and to lower the cost of managing their conditions. In this regard, there's a number of different proposals and provisions in the legislation that get at this general area. First of all, it encourages for those that have difficult-to-manage conditions that are in the medical assistance system, that have prepaid systems and fee-for-service, that they have medical homes and provided directed care to lower the cost and improve outcomes for this type of care. Secondly, there's broad payment reform to look at for in the system in terms of everything the Department of Health and Human Services oversees in the system, but also government employees in the system in terms of payment reform. And payment reform to make sure the system is not overused or underused, to make sure that we're using evidence-based best practice techniques in the system, and also some pay for performance. So we have some Q care in here as well. In terms of paying both providers for outcomes and also individuals and the consumers to better take care of their health and manage their care in conjunction with this coordinated provider system. So numbers of sections address this, sections 31, 32, 33, 34, and 35. So essentially 31 through 35 address various approaches to this payment reform, some through the currently government-administered programs, some through a variety of pilot projects to examine what models for doing this might work best in the system. Now, much of this is on, obviously, on the government side, that to which we actually have some control over, but hopefully payment reform models that can be developed through these systems can also spread to the private insurance system as well and be models for what can go on there as well. A fourth major area in terms of what we're addressing here is we're trying to make, in a whole variety of ways, health insurance more affordable to our citizens who currently may not lack coverage or access to coverage, or that what they're being offered is too expensive for their families. And this, of course, involves some of the governor's proposals. First among them is the exchange. There'll be a lot of discussion, I'm sure, about the exchange. The exchange has two main features. One is to allow small employers who currently do not have group programs for their employees to allow them and their employees to develop 125 plans and use prepaid pre-tax dollars, avoid the federal tax, pre-tax dollars, and state actually, but pre-tax dollars to purchase their health insurance through this exchange mechanism. And secondly, the exchange would allow those currently in the individual market to purchase insurance through the system, including access for those who qualify for it, medical care, Minnesota care. So this mechanism would has many different features to it, but would allow one of the most major portions of it would allow this use of pre-tax dollars, which will save considerable amount to those accessing the system. Finally, the legislation sets up the mechanism for having this ongoing discussion that all of us in this room are going to be involved in, I'm sure, over the next year and beyond on how we go to a more extensive health care reform for our state and make sure we reach those universal coverage goals by 2011. And in so doing, also get the cost in the system under control and improve outcomes. This, of course, in the legislation referred to as the Health Care Transportation Task Force. has a number of different duties, among them initially looking at all the many sources, state, regional, and federal organizations who have been looking at measurement in the healthcare system, performance outcomes in the healthcare system, cost containment in the healthcare system. Most of you have seen the bubble chart that we have on that, to coordinate the information, track the information among all that stuff, and to bring that to bear in this process we go forward, to have the best information available and from stakeholders moving forward. And then, of course, the other objective is to meet over the interim in summer and fall and report back to the legislature by the end of this year as to further recommendations to move us for a more comprehensive health care reform in the state, ensuring all Minnesotans access to quality care. So those, it's a general overview of what we're attempting to do in this legislation, much to be discussed as we move forward. So I'd be glad to take questions if we have time with the time limit set up, or follow up another day with conversation about it.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, maybe we don't have time today, but at some point I'd like to discuss whether there's any evidence that giving a state agency a goal to reduce healthcare spending will actually result in healthcare spending being reduced anyplace. I guess I'm not even sure the health department has the ability to reduce healthcare spending in the private sector.
Well, I would say that there are certainly things that we can encourage in the private sector that will save money. We heard rather dramatic testimony on managing people with chronic diseases and how you can dramatically improve their health and spend half as much money on them as you were spending before. Mm-hmm. The trouble is our payment system does not reward them for doing that. Mm-hmm. We reward them for letting people get really sick and then treating them in a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I don't doubt that there are tools that could help reduce expenditures in various parts of the system, and I've been a party to working on those for decades. That is not the question. The question is if we give the health department a goal to reduce overall healthcare spending, whether there's any evidence to believe that they would be able to actually cause it to be reduced.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can certainly discuss that. Are there any questions for Representative Bunn?
I'm looking at the senators.
Okay, thank you, Representative Bunn. And now Scott Lights give us a presentation on the governor's exchange and also the 125 plans.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the conference committee. My name is Scott Lights. I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Health. Mr. Chair, I'm here to discuss two elements of the governor's Healthy Connections proposal that were also included in the House omnibus bill. The first is the expanded use of Section 125 premium-only plans, and the second is the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange. I'll start with the Section 125 plans. The House bill and the governor's proposal expand the use of Section 125 plans, and what 125 plans are 125 refers to an element of the Federal Revenue Code, which allows for pre-tax dollars to be used for various purposes. One of the elements is to allow for those pre-tax dollars to be used to purchase health insurance coverage. Under the proposal, a requirement would be put in that employers who do not offer health insurance coverage establish Section 125 plans to allow for that for those pre-tax dollars to be used. What the plans do is they allow employees to have their pre-tax dollars withheld from their paychecks for the purposes of purchasing individual insurance coverage. Dollars come straight out of their paychecks on a pre-tax basis. That's non-taxable income then to the individual. And those dollars then are used to purchase coverage in the individual market. Because they're pre-tax, there is a substantial savings then associated with those dollars coming out. I should note right now, people who buy in the individual market purchase generally with after-tax dollars, meaning that they're taxable dollars. There's a substantial savings associated then with using pre-tax dollars. Both federal and state income taxes are not assessed on those dollars, and FICA taxes, Social Security, Medicare, and other taxes are also not assessed, which results in a fairly substantial savings. For as an example, if you're a single parent with two kids making about $30,000, for every dollar of premium that you would otherwise be charged, you have a savings of around 60% or 60 cents off of that dollar because of the pre-tax nature of the accounts. At higher income levels, the savings are somewhat lower but still substantial, anywhere between 28 and 40%. And those numbers are fairly similar for married couples as well. It's also true that employers can save as well. Generally, there is some cost to establishing these plans for employers. So for them to set up a 125 plan for their employees to use costs about $300, give or take, to set those 125 plans up. But if two or more of their employees enroll in a 125, the employers actually come out ahead because the money that's put in is also shielded from payroll taxes. And so the employer has a lower base of taxable income as well. The final thing I'll note on the savings piece is that because most of the tax revenue is raised actually at the federal level, for every state dollar that we put towards lost revenue, there's about four federal dollars that are leveraged as a result of that. So there's a substantial federal savings component to this as well, or actually I should say the federal government actually contributes greatly towards this in a greater measure than the state does. Final thing that I'll note on the 125 plans, under the proposal, people enrolling on MinnesotaCare could also use the 125 plans if their employees set them up to put in pre-tax dollars to actually purchase MinnesotaCare coverage as well. So this is not solely a private market mechanism, but also a mechanism that could be used to purchase MinnesotaCare coverage as well. The second element of the proposal is the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange. And the two really do go hand in hand, the expanded use of the 125s and the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange. What the insurance exchange is a standalone entity that would be governed, nonprofit entity that would be governed by a board of directors with a goal which can kind of simply be stated as those of us who have employer-based coverage now either have a human resources department that helps us sort through our changes, our options when we enroll in our insurance company, or have some ability to help us sort through what our options are and help us do the withholding and the payment of our health insurance premiums. The Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange would do a similar thing for people who work for employers who don't offer health insurance coverage. It would sort of play that large human resources function for them. And as a side benefit, we believe it also greatly improves the functioning of the individual insurance market in Minnesota. Anyone who's purchased individual coverage knows it's a challenging market and that there are a lot of there's no single place that you can sort of go to find out what your choices are in that market, and the insurance exchange will provide that. The proposal does have the individual market operating through the exchange, meaning this is the sole place you would purchase individual insurance coverage in Minnesota, and we do that for three reasons. The first is that it provides much greater ease of enrollment for employees. They have a single place to go with their pre-tax dollars to purchase health insurance coverage. Those dollars are withheld from their paychecks, go into the exchange, and then the individuals can use those pre-tax dollars to purchase individual coverage at a single point in time. The second is it's easier for employers. Employers can set up 125 plans, but without the exchange, they would have to transfer those dollars to whichever insurance company the employee chose. So there are a variety of individual market plans that operate in the market today. If they had eight employees and all eight employees chose different plans, that employer would have to transfer those dollars to each of those different plans. With a single place, with the individual market operating singly through the exchange, the employer merely needs to transfer the dollars to a single entity. And then finally, we believe that it will result in greater transparency and competition in the individual market. One of the things that we know drives competition and good market outcomes is information. This will provide a single place where there will be transparent information about the cost of coverage and the types of coverage that are offered that employees with their pre-tax dollars can compare across the plans and choose the plan that fits them best. We believe will spur competition in that marketplace so that people have so that the plans have an incentive to compete to be able to draw individuals into their plans based on the price of the care that they're of the policies that they're providing as well as the networks and so forth. So, Mr. Chair, those are the two proposals that are in the House bill that were under the governor's proposal as well.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Leitz, Under the proposal that you have made to the legislature, what would be the loss ratios for the individual policies that people would be purchasing with this 125 plan?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, the loss ratio requirements would remain the same as they are today.
And what are they?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, I don't have that specific information. Be happy to get it for the committee. I don't know if...
Maybe I could help you out.
Madam Chair. Mr. Chair.
It's a 60-40 loss ratio. So... an awful lot of the money you're saving for people are not going to go to provide them with health care.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, we believe that the proposal does indeed substantially lower the price that those individuals will be paying for that coverage.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Berglund.
Mr. Leitz, we've had this discussion before. It doesn't lower the price. It increases the money they have to pay the high price. Gives them additional tax dollars that otherwise they would pay to the government to pay for their health insurance. It doesn't reduce the price of the health insurance.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, you are correct in the sense that it does not lower the price of the health insurance coverage. It does improve the affordability of that coverage to that individual.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Leitz, this loss ratio on these individual policies, would the health exchange keep that money, or would that money be going back to the companies that would be issuing those policies?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, it would remain as it is today, meaning the plans would, those are the loss ratios that the plans would operate under.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Leitz, so then what would the health exchange keep in regard to the transaction?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, the health insurance exchange would assess approximately a 0.5% of premium to cover the ongoing operations of the exchange. That's what they would do in terms of the market.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Leitz, so that would be 0.5% increase over what they would be paying otherwise?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, that is correct. That they would have a 0.5% increase on the base pay price of the premium, and then would have anywhere from a 28% to a 55% reduction in their direct cost of the care, recognizing your point, which is that the premium level themselves do not decline, but rather the cost to the individual.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Leitz,